The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So I recently went to a hermitage, one of our hermitages, and I, you know, it's really a helpful opportunity for monks to have a place of quiet. Oftentimes people come here for a retreat, but we work here. So it's very nice for us to have that space to be really quiet and still. And so when I went out to the hermitage, I thought to myself, oh, I've got this topic I'm going to talk about. And then I kept hearing, giving and receiving are one. And about the third time I went, oh, you can't hear me? So anyway, is that better? Okay, sounds noisy. So I said, okay, giving and receiving are one. I'll think about that for the Dharma talk. And because it's so quiet, and because other than your own mind, you're all by yourself, and your mind, of course, comes with you wherever you go, so you have to train with that mind. But it was as if the experience of giving and receiving started happening, started flowing for me in relation to everything that was going on out there, including the mutual slaughter that goes on in this world. I know it's hard to think about that way, but it was actually a giving and receiving. And it was very profound impact. It's like there's this exchange going on, and exchange is a really poor word, but there's this back and forth thing that occurs between all life, and it flows. Now I have to mention that I mentioned to a monk this morning, she asked me what I was giving the talk on, and I said, giving and receiving are one, and she said, oh, how seasonal. So, but that was not my intention. Okay, so from that giving and receiving, there was this feeling when I was out at the retreat, on retreat, that everything was okay, that there wasn't anything wrong, and it was quiet, and all right, it's all right. And that was nice to have. You know, Reverend Master Aswin in the spring 2019 journal, in his article, Always Going On, now he was talking about something else, but he had this lovely description of which relates, I think, to what I was experiencing. And he says, quote, there is that, and that is capital T, meaning that, something beyond what we can put a name on, at the heart of all existence and life, which moves. There is time, there is space, and then there is this other dimension which flows through all directions and dimensions. When we meditate, we access, we are one with that flow. At the deepest level of our being, whether we feel it or not, we know this true life. So we know it. And it is alive, it moves, it flows. End quote. So that's part of what giving and receiving is about. It's the main part of that back and forthing, that exchanging, that flowing. Now, giving and receiving is a huge topic. Huge. And I'm not going to talk about a lot of what giving and receiving is about. Certainly not the universal aspect. Certainly not even our poor planet Earth, which is hurting right now terribly. Giving and receiving applies in this situation very clearly. But I'm going to keep my focus quite specific, because what I really want to talk about is giving and receiving in terms of our own daily practice. Now, you and I, and we all know that there's a lot happening right now in the world, and it's not necessarily happy-making. There's lots of animals becoming extinct, unprecedented extinction occurring. There's all kinds of pollution and damage and so on and so forth. And you could say, what? Is this woman crazy? Why is she talking about daily practice when the world's falling apart? Well, that's precisely why I'm talking about daily practice, because that's the thing we can do. We can practice daily and trust that the impact of our practice is enough. It's enough. It will help other beings. It will help ourselves, and it will help the world. And so that's why I'm focusing on our daily practice. Because if we understand giving and receiving through our daily practice, we will be of great benefit to this world. It's not the world's first crisis, by the way, and it's not probably the last. So, you know, you got to hold that. This is the way it is. And if anybody thinks daily practice doesn't matter, think about the Buddha, who did a very deep practice for lifetimes. Eventually, in his last lifetime, had an enlightenment experience. And 2,500 years later, 2,600 years later, yes, we're still getting the benefit of that one person's practice. So don't think that daily practice isn't important. It is. So, okay. So let's talk first about giving. The Buddha emphasized giving in a number of his Dharma talks and the way he talked. Now, why did he do that? You know, he wasn't looking for stuff. He wasn't looking for money. He was helping beings. And when we give, we help beings and we help ourselves. And giving is what opens our hearts. Generosity. You cannot meditate without being generous. You get hard and shut down. You have to open your heart. And opening the heart is about generosity. The Buddha saw from his past lives that giving was what led him to his present life, to enable him to become a Buddha. So giving's a really important part of our practice. The Buddha emphasized how giving created merit for and wholesome activity both for ourselves and for others, and that it's the first paramita, those qualities that help us reach the shore of enlightenment. So giving is really important. I think we all know that when we give, we feel good. It opens our hearts. We feel joyful. And I think part of that joy is because when we give, we connect with other. There's just that momentary connection. And speaking of connections and gifts, think about the Dharma. What a gift the Dharma is. Just this incredible gift for us. Now, the Buddha taught something which I think is really interesting. He used to say that giving alms to Buddhas and being compassionate and kind to others were of equal merit. Now, when I first heard that, I thought, what? You know, I mean, giving alms to a Buddha, that, you know, surely that's the best you can do in this world. But in his wisdom, he said, no, being kind and compassionate to other beings is of equal value. And I think about that and I think, well, yeah, because that's really hard to do. As we all know, this is really hard. Oh, you want to wring somebody's neck and, oh, no, I'm not supposed to do that. I have to find a way to be kind to this person. And sometimes the way we express kindness is to keep our mouth closed. So give ourselves credit for that. We refrain from saying what we would perhaps not wish to say in hindsight. Now, what about the receiving part? Giving and receiving are one. So how what is receiving and how are they one? Well, if you meditate, I think you can see, certainly I will say I have this difficulty with receiving, and maybe everybody has a certain difficulty in receiving, because when we're given something and we are receiving it, there can be a moment of feeling unworthy or embarrassed, which is a form of unworthiness. Or sometimes, well, we can see this in other people. It's harder to see it in ourselves. But sometimes when we give to someone who is giving and we want to give back and we give to that person and they're not very gracious about it or they don't want it. And we can see that. We can say, oh, you know, and there's something hard there. And I think what is hard on the receiving end is that shell of self. It's that shutting off. Oh, I can do this, but giving it back, I don't know about that. I'm uncomfortable with that. And so that hardness, you know, where does that hardness come? Maybe it comes from a certain trying to control. Oh, I'm a giver. I'm a giver, beware of that. You know, it's like this little category of, oh, I fall into this category. I am this thing. Or perhaps it's because of pride or inadequacy. And it can be either one. It can fall on either side of that. You know, oh, I'm such a good giver. Or, oh, I'm unworthy, you know. Or just clinging to our views can cause a block. This is what I'm talking about, a block towards receiving. St. Francis, in his most famous prayer, said, "For it is by giving that we receive." Now, I think that's a really profound statement because actually that's the exchange I'm talking about. That's the flow. When we give selflessly, we receive. How can we not? Because we're not separate beings. We're interconnected. We're all in this together. So when we give, we're receiving back from the other person. And that is the beautiful aspect of the back and forth. At Chukai, we say, Buddha recognizes Buddha and Buddha bows to Buddha. Buddha recognizes Buddha and Buddha bows to Buddha. That is a verbal translation of giving and receiving are one. So giving and receiving are one when we're not acting on selfishness, when we're acknowledging the connectedness. And we're acknowledging that this is the fabric of life. That's why when I was at, that's what I experienced out at the Hermitage. It's not about me, it's about life as a whole. There is this beautiful flow, this beautiful giving back and forth. you know, our daily life is filled with moments of giving and receiving. Filled with them. All we have to do is just look with those eyes. Our verses that we say, our scriptures we recite, our eating. Eating is an act of giving and receiving, but on a very big level. Not just from what's in the bowl, but from who got it into your bowl. All the things that contributed to our life here. I had an experience working with insurance agents recently. A lot of time spent, and I had two very kind ones who were really, it was a pleasure to work with them. They were very respectful, and I just felt I was able to be at ease with them. And at one point, near the end of the encounter, I said to one of the agents, I said, you know, I feel it was a real privilege to get to work with you. And he said, oh, I feel it's a real privilege to get to serve all of you. And it was like, whoa, you know, Buddha bows to Buddha. It was just beautiful. So I think these things are gifts to us. You know, it is in the little moments that make one dance. That's what the expression is. And it brings us such joy. So not only is giving joy, but then receiving joy. So that's a clue. If we're not feeling joy, okay, that's good to look at. And that leads right into, well, what if what we're being given is difficult? And then maybe we're not quite dancing with joy. Someone is criticizing us. Now, there are multiple levels of giving here. If you are the person who is criticizing another, and you are doing it for teaching purposes, you're trying to help beings. As the giver of criticism, are you still? Are you watching your mind? And are you being selfless? You're just pointing something out that may help the other person. You have to be really careful with that criticism or correction. You know, this is really, really important. And the receiver has to see it. Certainly in the monastery, it's helpful that correction is seen as trying to help, trying to really reach out, reach in to the other person and say, I know, I see your suffering. This needs to move in a way of really love. So when we're getting correction, you know, are we being still? Are we being open to it? Are we defending ourselves? Closing off to what's being offered? It's a really important thing to watch what we're doing. And are we willing to consider what the other person's saying? Isn't that a good receiving? Whether we agree with it or not, just consider it. Again, there's a bowing that we can do when we receive something that's difficult for us, and it's really important. Bow. And we have to watch our minds and open our hearts. What's new? Now what happens if someone's expressing a view we don't like? Or if someone is being hateful? That's just really upping the ante on giving and receiving. Because this is what's going on. And I can say from my own experience, I come from a family of strong views. And so it's been a real training to learn to just be quiet, just be still when it's going on. Although sometimes, honestly, I've had to get up and leave the room. And that's okay. You know, again, it's important not to give back what what is necessarily going on. I read a story of an Afro-American woman who was working in McDonald's who had an Aryan Brotherhood neo-Nazi come to get something. And he had a swastika on his hate finger, you know, anger finger. And she looked him right in the eyes and she said, "Oh, son, you're better than that." And he ran out. And after a while, he converted and let go of his hatred. The faith to say something like that is amazing to me. I wouldn't necessarily do that. I'm not sure I could do that. But I am in awe of someone who can make that kind of an offering, because it was obviously made with love. And that's why he ran away. And so we do the best we can. But it's really important to realize that we can do better. We can do better than return in kind. So obviously I'm talking about paying attention, following precepts, and watching carefully what our intentions are. Now, this is basic to our training, but I think our intentions are critically important, because those are the things that enable us to give selflessly. If we want something out of a situation and we don't see it, then there's a taint that goes with the giving. So I'd like to read something. This is a poem. It's in the back, the appendix, of The Mother of All Buddhas by Lex Hickson. And it's a poem, 27 verses on mind training. And I apologize, I have no idea how to pronounce his Tibetan name. He was a Tibetan Lama. And it's J-E, and then it's Tsongkhapa. That's how I would have pronounced it, probably totally wrong. Anyway, I'd like to quote it. I love this poem. I read it regularly. I read it often as an offering for the world when I'm awake in the middle of the night and I can't sleep, and I think, oh, well, we could all use this, myself included. So anyway, one of the verses is, "To cling to the intention of triumphing over another, the desire to prosper at the expense of any being, or to indulge in the slightest bias against any being because of personal feelings of attraction or repulsion. These alone are the cause for whatever suffering exists in personal lives and in the universe as a whole. We should meditate ceaselessly on this revolutionary truth, remaining conscious of it during every moment of existence." Well, that's pretty big, isn't it? Whoa! And it seems to me so helpful. I have found in the course of training for many years that watching my mind and watching my intention is so helpful to freeing my actions. So they are the gate where what follows can be either for the good or not. And that the suffering of this world is because of that clinging, of that wanting, of that self-partiality. Boy, can't we be compassionate with that? We're all struggling with that, are we not? So it's just really helpful, okay? I can see I probably have a taint of partiality there, you know. So this is how profound I think giving and receiving is. This is what it's talking about. This is the heart of it. And speaking of hearts, I like to bring up giving and receiving in our hearts, within our meditation hall inside, you know, the giving and receiving that we do with the Buddha nature. Reverend Master Jiu said many times that the truth does not insist upon itself. And I actually know that from my own experience. Years ago, I was at a hermitage, and I got this T-mail, telepathy sense, of what I should be doing next. And I went, oh no. Sorry, but that's the truth. I did that. I went, oh no, this is too much. I cannot do this. You're asking too much. So I drew this line in the sand and sat there. And of course, you know, the truth doesn't insist. So it sat there too. And after a while I went, oh, well, maybe I can't do that. And you erase the line and you start going again. And when you start going, you realize, oh, there's so much to do. What was I thinking that I couldn't go further? Forget it. We can all go further. And to some extent, that's what training, giving and receiving is about, is it's that willingness to keep going on, going further, stepping out. Now, there are many times in our practice, in our meditation practice, or in daily life, when we have an insight, an opening. And how do we receive that? Reverend Master Myoho wrote an article in the summer 2009 journal called The Unknown. Really a great article for me. I found it very helpful. Anyway, she says, quote, "To receive this unfolding of the Buddha's teaching, there must be no desire for or hope of achievement. Deeper insights can only be received. They cannot be taken." End quote. Well, I find that really helpful because really the purifying of our heart is up to us. We have to do that work. We have to. That's what we're doing. We just keep purifying our heart. We just keep sitting. We just keep being still. We keep getting out of the way. So when we're on the giving side with our Buddha nature, what are we giving? What are we offering? And I think that is, that's our whole life. You know, that's what we do. Our practice, our everything. You know, I think part of everybody's doing this. They just don't know it. They're just not aware of it. But we give. We do our best. Even people who do harm are doing their best and maybe not seeing deeply what the harm is they're doing. But we're all giving. We're giving to our heart. We wish to be loved. I don't think there's anybody, anything that doesn't have that wish. So we put the gift of our training on the altar of our heart and we sit still and we go, keep walking down the path, and we are a patient because it takes years, and that's okay. Something so precious cannot be grabbed, cannot be stolen. And keep in mind, it isn't a matter of being good. Because as Koho Zenji said, anyone who meditates runs the risk of being grabbed by the cosmic Buddha. So don't close your mind to whether you qualify or not. Just sit. And recognize we're not in charge of this process. The willingness to just wait, to keep looking up, even if it's dark, to me, that's the heart of our practice. That's what we do. The giving and receiving that occurs within our spiritual life, it's not easy to decipher what's going on. It takes time and effort, sometimes years, and it helps to listen as carefully as we can. We follow the precepts. We do our best. And sometimes we find ourselves in seemingly precarious places. It's like stepping off the 100-foot pole in Zen. uh-oh, that was when that I drew that line in the sand. I thought, oh my God, you couldn't be asking me to do that. But yes, you do. At times you have to step off. And there have been times in my life when I've had to step off the cliff into I did not know what. And I didn't realize it at the time, but I see it now. That was a form of giving. That was a form of giving. And believe me, I received things in return. And that was part of my practice. You know, but it's okay to be frightened and afraid in practice. That's a really important thing. And because when we are afraid, we can take a deep refuge. We can ask for help. And if we leave our minds open, that help will always come. You have to have an open mind, though, because if you think help's going to come, you're missing. It comes in this very different way. And you're looking for the help because you think it has to be this that you need. But actually, you're given that, which is much more important. And the Buddha scriptures are full of stories like this. So we're not alone in it. But one of my favorite expressions is, be obedient to the teaching, accept it with vows. So when we're given something and we recognize it, bow, follow it. It's really important, and it's not easy. I'd like to end with a quote, another quote from Reverend Master Myoho's article. Quote, what stands out most for me through the years of training is that the whole of the practice is there to enable us to be one who can receive, and she puts in parentheses, not self-create, the unfolding of the teaching, and realize through the way we live what meditation the water of the Spirit brings. That, to me, is the summation of a life of giving and receiving. So thank you very much.